Yeah, I know. I know what the deal is. I'm in incommunicado and I'm going live. It's the gingerbread man. It's the gingerbread man and I'm going live on TV. Now you can all tune in if you want to. The gingerbread man, the gingerbread man. You can call me Gingerbread Dan. Yes, indeed, it is March the 25th. Is 2026 still. It's just about 2 p.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, not far from the Strait of Juan de Fuca, not far from the great cities of Port Angeles and Sequim, not far from the Vampire Safe Haven in Forks, you know? You know how the vampires get all diamondy when they're in the sun having fun? Like in that vampire series, Twilight, right? What a bunch of bullshit. The vampires become diamondy as they glow in the sun. And since I'm talking to nobody, you all need to know, all my five fed friends, I'm declaring an immediate fatwa, a fatwa against all the bullshit, a fatwa against the dark sky. I'm declaring a fatwa against Panda Express because they used to deliver real fucking Panda, real fucking fast, and now they've failed us too. All of the institutions are crumbling, and ergo, I declare a fatwa. I declare a fatwa against people who don't like fatwas. I declare a fatwa against all the shitheads who don't know how to replace toilet paper. I declare a fatwa against the monkey freaks in Sector 77 Alpha, who are currently trying to wage war against the Sky Navies of Admiral Ballesta. She has a fatwa too, one against me, one against you. Hey, Ron, do you want me to declare a fatwa on anyone? Because this afternoon is a lot about declaring fatwas. Yesterday I went a little bit crazy because of shit that happened at work. And full disclosure, I take responsibility for letting a teenage brat trigger me, and I shouldn't have. But the rest of it was bullshit, and I can't talk about it in great detail because you know what? I don't want to ruin the work I'm doing just because I might have the right to be an arsonist. In this particular case, I have the right to do a lot of things that are perfectly legal, So when I say arsonist, I mean this proverbially. But there's stuff that I could do that's perfectly legal that would make the situation difficult. And I choose not to because I would just assume finish out the year. I don't know if I'm going to go back there next year. And at this point, I don't know if they're going to ask me back. But I would like to finish out the year to see if at least I could do that one thing. And then if someone comes back to me and says, Dan, you really think you could teach at a high school? Well, I already know I can. That's not even remotely the question. The question is, would I ever be allowed to without going into another $20,000 of debt and getting another degree I don't fucking need? Because I got three already. I don't need a fourth. And in reality, the main issue, and I don't mind talking about this, because if you're part of the school board, if you're part of the administration, this is like free fucking advice. There are a few spots on the Port Angeles High School campus that are flashpoints for things like kids vaping, kids getting in fights, kids bullying. The bus stop is well known, the alley near the bus stop. If you know, you know. The 300 male bathroom not far from the special ed rooms was never a flashpoint until they made it open for all students. And the problem is, once they did that, they gave the students a place where they could hang out, they could link up. And from my perspective, and I'll take the responsibility in terms of what I get paid too, but I think this is on every adult at the high school. But from my perspective, we have given up to the bullies taking over that bathroom. I totally fucked up by overreacting to one of those kids. But the thing should have never happened in the first place. There should have never been a situation where, for example, the kids trashed the bathroom so bad, there's not even paper towels. So think about the COVID and how they made us follow arrows and do all kinds of other crazy Simon Says bullshit. Supposedly, a lot of these people still believe in that nonsense. Well, if you do, put some fucking paper towels back in the fucking bathroom. Keep it clean. It's currently getting trashed every fucking day. And when I say that, this is not the fault of the janitors. This is not a fault of the custodians. Whoever made the decision to open that bathroom to everybody screwed up. So free advice. You want to take away a potential lawsuit, a potential bad situation, conflict, violence, and yeah, a lot of drug use and other crime might be happening in the whatever, you know, Rick's Cafe or Rick's Bar, like in Casablanca. If you want to solve that problem, shut down the 300 male bathroom and probably the female bathroom too. Let parents and teachers keep the keys. So if there's an emergency, they can go, oh, I have to emergency go to the bathroom. That's not why the kids are going there. Maybe one in six use the bathroom as a bathroom. Maybe one in five. But the point is, most of the people that head there are going there to check their phone, talk to their friends, use their vape pen. Anyways, free advice. But nobody's going to listen because I'm just a dumbass para-educator, which means para meaning not really. So I'm not really an educator, so I don't really deserve any fucking respect. That's the ticket right there. But if we're going to talk about fatwas and para-education, instead of calling me a para-educator or gingerbread, which is on my t-shirt, I would just assume be called a quasi-educator, because at least it would tell the truth. I'm quasi-educator. I'm a quasi-person. It's kind of like, what was that judgment in the 19th century? The one about what percentage of a person a slave was. And again, I don't think that's funny, but I'm a percentage of an educator, and I get a percentage of respect. I don't get full respect. Other teachers do. A lot of people there do. And I've talked to people about this, and I've thought on this, and I came to this realization I've kind of understood for the last couple years. One of the reasons why I piss people off is because I'm a walking, breathing example of how the American dream right now, and maybe always, but definitely right now, is kind of bullshit. I am a walking, breathing example of how a lot of things are not working. And you could say, well, Dan's mentally ill, can't keep a job, drinks too much, maybe he's a pothead. You can go down a list of things. You can come up with all kinds of reasons why I am here. But the simple truth is, I know more people living on the edge of economic destruction than I know people who have plenty of cash, plenty of resources. And then when you talk about the people with plenty of cash, a lot of that's based on paper, which means it's bank accounts, it's 401ks, it's investment portfolios, it's real estate, which means not the land, but the quote unquote value of the land. This is going to evaporate so quickly, it will make people's heads spin, and it will be one of the reasons why a lot of people are going to lose it pretty soon. They're going to go batshit crazy. They're going to scream at the world, shake their fists at God, and say, why'd you do this to me? You want a fatwa against warmongering and tyrannical lunatics? I do too, but you know I already got my one phone call from the Secret Service this year, so I can't declare. If I declared a fatwa adjacent to what you just described, Ron, I might be in trouble. I promised them no more fatwas. When the Secret Service called me, hey Dan, will you pick up? I said, okay, what do you want to talk about? Well, how you been doing lately? Well, how are you, baby? We're doing okay, Dan. But we saw your social media post. The one that was bad. The one that was not so good. No more fatwas, Dan. No more fatwas against anybody connected to the Orange Durango Fandango Majango. No more fatwas against the Dorito Bandito. No more fatwas against, you know, Marshall Cheeto. So sadly, Ron, I can't declare a fatwa against all the warmongers and all the tyrannical lunatics, but I can at least say we need a fatwa against the bullshit artists, the edgelords. And I don't mean kill them, so that's not really a fatwa. It's more like a fuck you. No violence, no hate, not really. No use of force. But just a lot of these people, I just think they can fuck off. That's my fuckwa. I fuckwa everybody. I fuckwa the edgelords who talk up war with Iran. I fuckwa the crazy freaks opening their beaks like Laura Loomer. She's just a panicking goomer. But at the end of the day, I want a fuckwa, which is not a violent threat. Just a fuckwa, which means fuck off, fuckwad, to all these shitheads who either knowingly or unknowingly promote an idea that is fundamentally dangerous, that it is legitimate to resolve conflict with force. I get that sometimes there's a bully and you gotta fight back. That's called self-defense. You know, Gingerbread Man here, he's 100% okay with self-defense, and if you know, you know. But there is no moral justification for the use of force against other people unless you're defending yourself or somebody who cannot defend themselves. And that's not a country, that's a person. Anytime nations organize armies, they're taking strangers and they're putting them through torture called basic training. And they're convincing them that there's this enemy that's evil and make sure you blow them away. It's multiple levels of abuse. And then you send people to a war zone. You give them PTSD. You give them brain damage from concussive injury. They come back home. They end up on the streets using the drugs that they protected. The drugs in Afghanistan that they stood guard, watching, are the drugs that ultimately kill them. That's not the story that you generally get when you see those commercials before the movie, you know, for the Navy SEALs or whatever. But that's the truth, okay? Self-defense is legitimate, but being a bully has never been legitimate. And if you're a Christian, you better understand that there is nothing Christ ever said that allows a person to be a bully, that allows a person to resolve problems by beating other people up. I don't think Christ ever did that. If you come back to me, well, he casted out demons, yeah. Are you telling me, literally, that you want to demonize the entire nation of Iran? I almost said Israel, huh? And I'm almost guilty of that. Do we want to demonize 90 million people? Because that's what Papa Blumpity Blump is currently doing. He is demonizing 90 million. He is telling you they're not real people. They cut babies in half. They cut women in half. They do all these terrible things. Israel. Oh, and they might end up with a nuke. Israel. And they might make terrorist threats with nukes. Samson option. In fact, when you go down the list of reasons for taking out Tehran, there are really also valid reasons for taking out the state of Israel. And I gotta just repeat this. Papa Blumpity Blump, if you want to save your presidency, if you're a real person, if you want to totally trump any blackmail they have on you, you got one move. You won't do it. You can't do it. Maybe you won't, can't, whatever. I don't give a fuck. But there's one move that would save your presidency, open up the Strait of Hormuz, send oil cascading downward, potentially normalize relations across the whole Middle East, and maybe even a big peace treaty in the Ukraine for the kit and caboodle. You have one move, Mr. President, and that is to toss the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel. These aren't the children of Jacob. They're most likely, you know, Ukrainians, Polacks, and Turks. Take the modern Khazar state of Israel and throw it under the fucking bus. We should join forces with Iran. You should make a secret deal with Iran. We should immediately capture the Israeli nukes. That's job number one, because you don't want Jim Jones with a nuke. And then once we've captured their nukes and taken out their fangs, we need to deconstruct the modern state of Israel. It is the number one source of violence there. They are, oh, we're the only democracy. No, you guys are shitheads. I don't care if you vote. Nobody likes you. And the longer you stay there and abuse your neighbors, the more they hate you. Mr. President, you have one move that would literally change the course of history, would save your presidency, and probably would end up getting you, legitimately, the Nobel Peace Prize. Toss Israel under the fucking bus. That's it. That's it. No more Spielberg movies, okay? No more bullshit from your son-in-law. No more grifting, no more pedophile safe haven. Toss Israel under the fucking bus. If you do that, guess what? The porn industry also gets hit real hard. And the people that spy on Americans get real hard, hit real hard. In fact, a ton of organized crime, including financial organized crime that assists in the drug trade, vaporizes. And all you have to do, Mr. President, is declare war on the state of Israel and take it down. And work with Iran, and all of a sudden the whole world changes, but nobody has the courage to do it. And that's why we might be fucked. And if Iran does have the resources to stand up for a fight, and if Israel is pushed into a corner, then yeah, that Samson option, which is literal terrorism, when you tell the whole planet that if you lose a war, you're gonna launch a nukes, you're gonna launch nukes at everybody. That's literally what terrorists do. They walk into a room with a stick of dynamite and say, if you don't give me a cheeseburger, I'm going to kill everybody. Well, folks, if we're opposed to terrorism, if we won't deal with terrorists, if we have a policy of not negotiating with terrorists, then why the fuck do we give the state of Israel one penny? Why don't we just declare war on them? USS Liberty, 1967. You can choose that they're the super smart people, the unsinkable aircraft carrier. Over here, you know, and they knew what they were doing when they sunk the Liberty, or you can call them dumbasses, and they're not unsinkable, and they have been a giant drag on us, and they do not represent one Hebrew. Not really. And if there are actual legitimate children of Jacob in the state of Israel, get the fuck out. You know, read your Bible. Understand that Israel, the government of Israel, has been destroyed so many times. The remnant survives, the actual remnant, but the government, the corrupt people, the Pharisees, the shitheads, they usually get vaporized or swallowed up by the sand. That's if you believe in the Torah. So I'm not going to declare any more fatwas. I don't even know if I'm going to declare any more fuckwads or fuckwas. I'm not going to speak to you about the power of magnificence or seaflow. Oh, actually, I do want to talk about protein powders, various spider egg jellies, and the newest kinds of frozen and variously types of formed and greasy seaflow suppository nutritional blocks. Yeah. So, Ron, I'm going to need your help. When you see my screen, I'm going to share my screen. When you see it, would you let me know? Because I would love it. And for those who are listening, this is actually the notes that will go with the podcast anyway. So you can just go to my blog. That's Planetary Status Report at, you know, yeah, planetarystatusreport.com. And it will be a link to there, and the notes are there. And I don't want to talk about this. I'm going to share the screen. I'm going to ask my friend Ron to tell me when he sees it. But I also need to tell you just up front, I don't really want to talk about this. I don't really want to talk about anything related to the Iran war. I am not naive. Okay, and also you've listened to me, so you know I got lots of questions about the Ukraine conflict. I got even more questions about this one. On one level, we can have a geopolitical conversation, but I'm sorry, I think that there's another level to this. I'm not saying I'm right, that's just my opinion. So if we do talk about this, we're going to be talking on that ground level where everybody assumes that these leaders are independent actors and all of this is just the organic result of great power politics, right? There you go. Wow, great, only 2 to 3 seconds. I must be living in a free world there, Ron. I mean, it is the internet, what, 2026, 30 years of internet. It's so great for people like me. I don't want to give the Iran war that energy, but I am gonna talk about it because really, everyone's talking about it, and I would be a shitty podcaster if I didn't spend some time on it. So I put together some notes for today. And before I continue, I don't have all of the up-to-date info on what's really happening. To my knowledge right now, we have light forces headed to the Persian Gulf. When I say light forces, I'm talking Rangers, I'm talking 82nd Airborne, I'm talking 101, you know, patch on my shoulder. And obviously the Marines, the Expeditionary Forces. These are light forces. These aren't heavy forces. Do they have the ability to pull in heavy metal? Yeah. Indirect fires, they can pull in missiles. They can pull in, if they've got artillery, they can do that. They've got mortars. And they have some equipment, but they don't really have big tanks. If they have tanks, they have a few of them. And frankly, getting a 70-ton battle tank into theater, it's not going to be easy. Okay, there are lots of theoretical possibilities. Certainly, some of these ships might have one or two, but I have no idea. Will they have armored vehicles? Absolutely. But every form of armor, every form of castle, every form of fortification can be pierced. So whatever sort of armor we give these units, it isn't going to be a magical shield that allows them to rommel their way to Tehran. Before I continue, I don't claim to have a ton of special knowledge here. I was in the military. I studied military history in graduate school. I never got my PhD. Mostly what I studied to get my master's degree was Russian military history, the Second World War, which the Russians call the Great Patriotic War, and all of the stuff related to that. Because frankly, if you want to study conventional warfare, and if you want to study World War II, there is only one theater, and that's the Eastern Front. It's something a lot of people don't want to talk about because most of World War II was fought there. It's entirely plausible that the outcome of World War II was primarily decided by the Eastern Front. That doesn't mean we didn't help. It just means that's where the shit was happening. After 1942, nearly 80% of the German war machine, to include troops, was headed east. And that was for the rest of the war. And that was mostly after 42 for holding actions, because other than, you know, the Battle of Kursk or Operation Citadel, the Germans stopped doing strategic offensives in 1943. So it was really about how do we slowly retreat back to Germany without losing the whole German army. That was most of the Eastern Front for the Germans during World War II. They had a couple of years of spectacular gains, and then the rest of the war, they slowly retreated. Sorry for summarizing, but I don't really want to talk about this. I don't want to, but I will. And you should, so you should know, do I have enough background to talk about this? Of course I do. There's all kinds of stupid freaks out there talking out of their asses, but whatever. I don't like giving energy to these things. I want to repeat this because I think people don't understand. There is, in my opinion, I know this won't happen. Ron, you can already call me a dumb shit because I know that this won't happen. And I'm repeating what I just said. But I'll repeat it again. If Trump were to throw the state of Israel under the bus, that would be the grand bargain. And yeah, you probably want to tell the Israelis to get the fuck out. It wouldn't be the biggest mass migration ever. I think a couple years under Biden beat that. So yeah, I'm pretty certain a lot of people have been forced to migrate in that part of the world recently. We can all meditate if other groups of people have been bombed and forced around. So really, all Trump would have to do is get a hold of the nukes. You gotta do that first, which means before they know you're doing anything with Iran, you gotta get the nukes, all of them. And if that means using a tactical nuke, I hate to say it, but you gotta. Because if you don't get those nukes from Jim Jones, Jim Jones will use them. And in this case, Jim Jones isn't just Netanyahu. Jim Jones is that entire death cult, okay? So imagine we're making stew, okay? We're making stew. My friends out there, we're all making stew. And the stew is called the Iran War. If you wanted to research some historical events that can help you put this into a box before it unfolds, I can think of four things to look at. Look at the Thucydides trap as a concept related to the Peloponnesian War. And just as a reminder, the Thucydides trap deals with a problem of an older empire or power being confronted by an arising new power. And what happens as a result is almost always war. And it doesn't mean the new power always wins, but there's gonna be a fight. So the Thucydides trap, people would say, Exhibit A, look what's happening right now. And I gotta be honest with you, if you're gonna look at it from the ground level, it probably applies. Another thing you should look at if you want to understand this conflict, in my humble opinion, look at the Russo-Japanese War. Deconstruct and look at what Russians believed about their military prior to the Russo-Japanese War vis-a-vis anybody in the East. And understand that a lot of racism led to the destruction of the Russian naval forces as a result of the war, because they discounted that the Japanese could possibly win. They discounted the idea that these newer, faster torpedo boats would literally run circles around them and just slowly torpedo them to death. Well, not slowly, rapidly torpedo them to death. The Russians came to a fight with a 12-gauge shotgun, and the people in the home had a machine gun, and that's just never going to work. So look at the Russo-Japanese War. If you want to understand this conflict from that angle, that's another thing to look at. In terms of the battlefield mechanics, Gallipoli. There's a movie, but look into the Gallipoli campaign. It was stupid to begin with. It happened during World War I. It was Churchill's idea when he was with the Royal Navy. It was Churchill's idea to attack the soft underbelly. The soft underbelly, which was Turkey, and they would come up through the soft underbelly. The problem was is that they wanted to conduct a naval operation, an invasion, without proper technology for doing it, because that kind of tech hadn't really arrived yet, in an environment where you got cliffs and mountains. So you're coming across the beaches, but and you're getting shot at. You're getting shelled. You're coming in on the beaches, you're getting shelled. But then you get to these mountain ramparts, and yeah, you can survive in the trench for a while. The Turks are on the other side. You're never getting off the beach. If you want to think about the Karg operation and put it into a box, study Gallipoli. And I would also add Market Garden. And what was Market Garden? Market Garden was a dual airborne ground operation in late 1944, just after we invaded France, with the goal of capturing key bridges all the way to Germany in the Low Countries. So these Low Countries are swampy, they're recovered from the ocean, there's lots of dikes, lots of canals, rivers flowing out into the Baltic, out into the North Sea. And it was, on one level, it would have been a brilliant idea if they'd had the logistics. They simply didn't have the logistics to move that many airborne troops that far that fast. And here was the other problem. And again, this is an example of where the intelligence preparation of the battlefield failed. The Germans, after we invaded, started treating the Western Front like vacation time. It's vacation time. Vacation time. When we invaded France in 44, I think we faced maybe a dozen divisions, maybe up to 20 possible. The Germans by that time had hundreds of divisions committed to the Eastern Front. And the Red Army, when they finally rolled into Berlin, had 300 divisions. Now, were they all good? No. Especially the Soviet divisions. A lot of them were just prisoners with machine guns, with a guy behind them pointing a machine gun at them. That was their military unit. That was their elite corps. And if all you want to do is grind things to death, then the Red Army, they pulled it off, right? But by the time we invaded, they would cycle German divisions from the Eastern Front to the Western Front, almost like a reward, definitely a vacation. When we conducted Market Garden, there were German armored divisions, battle-hardened Eastern Front divisions there, waiting for us. This was not good. This was not good. This was really bad. So when you're thinking about what's about to happen, there are these historical things you can factor in. I call it one quarter of this, one quarter of that, like it's a stew. Maybe that's dumb. But look at the Thucydides trap from a strategic standpoint and add in the fact that there are a lot of people who simply want you to ignore the possibility that the financial system's imploding right now. But look at the Thucydides trap. If you want to understand the dynamic between ourselves and Iran, look at the Russo-Japanese War. And if you want to understand the likelihood that light forces will succeed in this situation, look at Gallipoli campaign, World War I, and look at Market Garden, World War II. There's a rough estimate that the Iranians can deploy about 20 divisions. That's not a super gigantic number, but again, they got home field advantage. They will be fighting in a place they understand. They'll be resupplied by underground networks of hardened facilities, hardened warehouses. They will be underground themselves until the moment of battle. This is a technique that the North Vietnamese used against us in Vietnam. Lots of tunnels, lots of areas where they were just hidden underneath the surface. And then when we would get close enough, that's when they would attack. And this also had a big impact on our ability to use the Air Force. By the way, one major experiment with weather warfare, by the way, which is a matter of public record, is Operation Popeye. And the purpose of Popeye was to flood the Ho Chi Minh Trail. When that failed, what they doubled down on was something called Agent Orange. And Agent Orange was just to defoliate the whole thing. It was poisonous. It's going to give you cancer. But it was intended to defoliate the jungle so we could see the North Viet Cong, so we could see the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We couldn't flood it, so we were just going to take away all the leaves. It didn't work. If you look at, and let's just take a look really quick, if that's okay with the peanut gallery. If you look at a map of Iran and the surrounding countries, okay? Let's just start with Iran. The blue, I got hashed out, I'd call that SLOGO. SLOGO, SLOGO terrain. Which means if you want to have those fast-paced World War II desert rat-style Rommel battles, you're not having it in SLOGO. The black, I'm calling no-go. That doesn't mean you couldn't move armored forces into the mountains and fight. It just means it would be a really bad idea. So wherever you look at this map and you see hashed out black or hashed out blue, that just means you're not really going to move any heavy forces through there. Not really. But there are places where you could move heavy forces and you could have these sort of large engagements. If you look down where I have it called the Iraq axis, let's just go there. If you go down to this area, there is a path heading towards the other side of the Persian Gulf that might be relatively flat, might be relatively mobile, so you might be able to move an armored division in those areas, and you might be able to get through some gaps, perhaps in the mountain range, with light forces support. You're not going to do this with armored alone. You're not going to do this with light forces alone. You're probably going to need both. You're going to need light forces to capture key choke points, because if you look at these ranges, there might be narrow passages where you could move a division through, but not without people shooting at you from both sides. So you're not going to be rapidly moving through these mountain ranges ever. Just something people should consider. If you look at all the red arrows, they're not intended to imply that you would come from all those axes, but I do think if you're going to engage a plan, you're going to have to come from multiple axes, in part because the Iranians have distributed everything. So they've already trumped your card. It's kind of like Lindsey Graham comparing this to Iwo Jima. Well, firstly, Iwo Jima was not a slam dunk. And I think Lindsey Graham probably doesn't really understand how brutal it was. That's number one. But I'll go with his analogy. Imagine Iwo Jima was the size of Iran. That's kind of what we're talking about. A lot of no-go, a lot of slow-go terrain. And like I said, you're not going to Rommel your way to Tehran in that situation. You're going to have to use light forces to capture key terrain. That's going to be brutal. And then you're going to have to hope that they can hold those forces as your armored and artillery and other air support get in position. That's going to be brutal. If we don't know about their air defense layout, if they're hiding it like everything else, it could be a real brutal day for light forces. Just something to think about. Now, we might return to this fun map because it's a fun day. Avenues of approach are an issue. Here's another thing that's a problem. Prior to the Iran war, in many ways prior to 9/11, just about every government in the UAE, you can include Saudi Arabia, all of these Gulf governments since the 90s at least, and probably going back further, have been very tenuous. And they rule by doing two things, goodies and basically torture, beatings and torture, goodies and beatings. If they don't like the goodies or they don't get the goodies, they get the beatings. That's a good way to delineate. Goodies and beatings. And when I say beatings, I mean torture, murder, mass murder. Saudi Arabia has no issue killing lots of people. Well, the goodies stopped being as useful about 10, 15 years ago. And this is actually in WikiLeaks. This is an actual cable that Hillary Clinton received related to the fact that Gawar was pumping way too much salt water and they were running out of goodies. And when these countries run out of goodies, they got to increase the beatings. That's how they roll. Here's a magical question. It's going to take a certain amount of time to build up a realistic force unless we're going to use magical UFO technology. So if we can get out of the woo-woo world for a second and imagine we're in the real world, whatever the fuck that means, there's a build-up time period. And I don't even think it's really started yet, but let's pretend it has. The first Gulf War needed about 6 months of build-up, okay? But we don't have the same forces we did back then in terms of number. So I don't know if we can do it in 6 months. Over those 6 months, you're going to be moving in forces and you're going to be receiving missile fire. Now, here's the question. Over those 6 months, will these governments, the government of Kuwait, Qatar, all the UAE governments, will the Saudi Arabian government, will these governments remain stable or will they implode? Because if you ask me, they're probably this close to imploding right now. And if Iran punishes them like they have the legal right to do so, their situations get really bleak really fast. If Iran just starts picking off desal plants up and down the coast, if they start picking off all of the major oil infrastructure, it's not just force majeure. For all intents and purposes, that oil, that gas station, the Persian Gulf, is closed for business at least months after the peace, if not years or decades, but probably years, for years. And that's if nobody used nukes, right? We don't use any nukes at all. And we don't know what the Iranians will do. So here's the question. Do these governments, these friendly governments that are really terrible governments, do they stay in power? I don't know. We don't know the full capability of Iran. We don't. We think we do, but we don't. They made a lot of assumptions prior to this war, and now we can see that a lot of those assumptions are false. So we have some huge wild cards on the Iranian side. On the other hand, if you think of this from a perspective of just strategy, we don't necessarily know what the Pentagon has either. I mean, let's say, think of that movie Winter Soldier, where, you know, Captain America gets an introduction to our next generation super fantastic sky carriers with super cannons and everything else, okay? We might have some advanced space navy, and we might have advanced space weapons, and we might be able to use them. But here's the one problem we face, and it's really important, because if Lindsey Graham is right and Iran is just a big giant Iwo Jima, that means they're dug in pretty deep. And so if you got a magical space weapon, it better be able to penetrate rock, concrete, steel, going down hundreds and hundreds of feet. Yeah, that's not as easy to do with a fantastic space weapon as people think it might be easy to do. But let's say they got the fantastic space weapons. Once you use it, everybody knows. It's like the first Gulf War. They had to tell people about the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter, because if they didn't, once they used it, people would know. People will know we have these weapons. There is an argument to be made that one of the reasons why Russia has been using a lot of poor technology, and one of the reasons why we haven't really used any fantastical weapons yet, is because we're keeping stuff in reserve in case we come blows with Russia and China, and the same for them. And that means we don't know what any of these countries have. We don't know what China has. We don't know what Russia has. We don't know what Iran has. We don't even know what the state of Israel has. We don't. We don't know what the Pentagon has. They could have fantastical weapons, and if they do, we're gonna find out real frickin' soon. Israel's a wild card, for the same reason that these Emirates and Saudi Arabia are wild cards. Is there anything holding together the modern state of Israel than the cult of Zionism and a lot of crookedness and a lot of free money from the United States that frankly is just down the drain? What holds them together? Because if all that holds them together are dollars and fear and propaganda and a lot of crime, if that's the only thing that holds that society together, then there was never a society anyways. Okay, that was just, you know, the mafia in a different form, a criminal organization. That's what we're talking about. And so I do wonder to myself if people realize how quickly it could evaporate. And another thing I think people haven't considered yet, and this is something really to think on, and this might even be a counter argument to letting Israel be destroyed, it could be in many ways a virtual organization at this point, which means even if you blew up every square mile of the modern state of Israel, the state of Israel is in other places, other countries, dual citizens. And so if Trump were to toss Israel under the bus, it would have to be comprehensive. We would have to remove all the dual citizens from our government. It's just a matter of survival. They would have to be gone. And that doesn't mean they go to a camp, although a lot of them joke about alligator Alcatraz. No, they just have to be gone. And if no one will take them, I don't know how to phrase this. That's their fucking fault. For years and years and years, they convinced Americans to drop bombs on poor people. And then when all the poor people from the Middle East had to find a place to live, we were all shocked, shocked, shocked that they headed to Europe. For years and years and years, these people have been involved in policies that are wretched. They're not justifiable. They're not just evil or lack justification. They're wretched. If demons walked around, these are the types of policies demons would have. So there is no moral issue, in my opinion, with deciding to toss the state of Israel under the bus. These people have nothing to do with God's plan in the sense of they're the chosen people. No, they're the ones that chose to rip off a religion, and it's happened before, Rome. But they're not who they say they are, Rome. They're not. Supposedly, and again, I'm going down a list of shit here. I'm gonna check the chat because you don't want me to ignore you. No more fatwas. No more fatwas. We're abandoning all fatwas. Okay. Supposedly, the Iranians have about 30 submarines. Most of these, and I'm not talking about drones, guys. They got drones. I know they have drones. I'm talking manned submarines. Supposedly, the Iranians have about 30 manned submarines. Most are coastal class type submarines, small and mini. They're not even medium sized. They have three diesel electric Russian Kilo class submarines capable of firing cruise missiles. That's of interest. I don't know, and you can email me if you found a link, but I don't know if we have claimed to take them out yet, that we've taken out these three Kilo class, because if we haven't, these are ocean deep water submarines. These are submarines that, if they're properly built, engineered, and kept up with latest technology, can run very quiet. In some cases, they can run quieter than, our submarines. So, yeah. Those three Kilo class diesel electrics, if they've been sunk, then they're off the board. If they're still on the board, they are running silent, running deep, incommunicado. They are working off of pre-war plans, which means they have plans that they're following that require no approval. This means that they're operating under their own command for release of weapons. Do they have nukes? Well, the Iranians say they don't have nukes, so they don't have nukes. But if they can fire cruise missiles, they could get to places. They could pop up and get to places where they could do a lot of damage. They could easily take out a U.S. aircraft carrier. I mean, of course, they wouldn't survive. They would take out the carrier, and the support group would, you know, swarm on them, and the submarines that are part of the support group would, you know, immediately destroy them. But they could theoretically take out a carrier before they die. If they've got these three Kilo class submarines, that gives them another scenario where they can potentially, you know, punch the state of Israel in the face. I don't think they would use them against us, even though they could. I do see them potentially using them against the state of Israel, but from the Mediterranean side. And if they were going to do that, then they might want to actually, you know, work with, coordinate with, share plans with Hezbollah. And yeah, the state of Israel said they destroyed Hezbollah. Well, it looks like they didn't. It's kind of like Trump saying he took out all the nukes. Oh, we took out all the nuclear production. It's all gone. Well, why the fuck are we there now, right? I don't like listening to Trump's statements, and I'll tell you why. And it's the same reason why it was stupid. Secret Service, I knew it was stupid for me to drink some whiskey and post some stupid shit on social media making threats against the big guy. That was wrong. But that's because I was giving him the energy to assume he's real, not just a column of smoke. But let's pretend he's real and not just a column of smoke, which is what I think he is. If you're listening to his statements and the fact that we did in fact commit a war of aggression, his statements are statements that are what war criminals would say, and frankly, war criminals who end up getting hung. He is describing the Iranian people in terms that would fully justify mass death. That in and of itself, and what it implies, is probably a war crime. But the fact that he started this war with the Israelis is an absolute war crime. It is a crime of aggressive war, wars of aggression. It is the top crime, according to Nuremberg. It is the worst thing you can do, because all of the other forms of evil in war come from that first decision to declare an illegal war, to commit an illegal war, to participate in an illegal war. This is what Trump's doing. But when you listen to his language, he's not hiding it. He's not even attempting to use the mealy-mouthed language that Biden or Obama or Bush would use. He's not even attempting to put it in terms that involve anything righteous. He's mostly just describing the Iranians as evil, that he's on some holy mission. He sounds like somebody from 1,000 years ago. Now the question is it really Trump talking? Is it PSYOP bullshit? Or is it something else? I can't tell you. I believe there's a 10% chance, and I came to this conclusion back in 2018. I believe there's a 10% chance that the United States has not been able to properly refurbish thermonuclear weapons for the last 30 years. And again, if this were true, this would theoretically take down our government. This would be huge. This would be such a fuck you to the American people and our security. Again, I'm not a fan of nukes, but if this were true, this would be very destabilizing. And if this were true, there's nearly 100% chance that both the Russians and the Chinese know. So they know this. They know that there's a chance that our nuclear deterrent is 1 divided by 1,000. It used to be 1, a whole, all of it, all the thousands of weapons we have. But if you take all that power, all that megatonnage, and you divide by 1,000, that might be our actual deterrent right now. And if that were true, then that's a real problem. That's a serious problem, and that's one of the reasons why the situation's so unstable. Like I said, folks, I've said this so many times. I think there's more going on up here. I think there's more going on. For those of you listening, imagine my hands up in the air, right? There's more going on up here. But down here is what we're talking about. And if you're going to be focused on down here, nuclear war theory, that's Herman Kahn, that's On Thermonuclear War, RAND Corporation Press. Nuclear war theory says that the Russians and the Chinese should coordinate to take out the government, our government, because you cannot apply mutually assured destruction to crazy people. You can sit across the table from Joseph Stalin. You can't. He was an evil piece of shit, but you could. Not sure you could do that with Hitler. You could sit across the table from Mao Zedong. Not sure you could do that with Jim Jones. And the problem is, these people in Israel are more like, you know, yeah, that. And also, Trump looks like Jim Jones. So if the Russians and the Chinese are looking at Jim Jones and he has nuclear weapons, and he's crazy, and he's saying crazy shit, nuclear war theory says you do not let a madman take the initiative. You've got to take him out. And that means a decapitation strike. That means taking out probably DC, taking out NORAD, taking out command and control. Maybe you leave missiles mostly intact. Probably you can't do anything about the submarines, but they're a delayed response. You probably do take out some of the major SAC bases, but you don't just bomb all the cities. And then you wait, you pause, and you let whoever's left in America know that you paused, that you want to end the war, and talk to any sane American that will pick up the phone. If old Grandma Gieselgrease in Texas can string together words that sound sane, World War III ends right there. The submarines don't launch, it ends. And the fact is, as crazy as that would be, as dangerous as that would be, leaving the initiative in nuclear war up to crazy people is more dangerous. And that is the problem, the conundrum facing the Chinese and the Russians right now. if this is real, if on the ground level you all think this is real, then they do have to seriously ask the question, do we immediately do a first strike? Last but not least, I've talked a little bit about this, but we don't know what the Iranians have. We really, really, really don't know what they have in terms of electronic warfare. And we're not going to know until it's too late. I mean, a good Iranian strategy would be to let us do a buildup. Build up our forces like it's Gulf War I. You know, we'd have our Stormy Norman. Here's the luckiest guy in Tehran, you know? But here's the deal. If the Iranians have the latest in high-tech electronic warfare, that's not just signal jamming, okay? That's not just signal jamming. That's not just impacting fiber cables with, you know, various types of spectrum, you know, various types of spectrum manipulation to include UV pumping. It's not just stopping a signal. If they have latest gen, it means delivering microwaves at electronic components and causing them to fail. So you have this shoulder-fired maser. It's not a missile. It fires a beam of energy, and you shoot it at an F-15, and F-15's fly-by-wire. It's got computer chips. They get fried. The F-15 falls out of the sky. And this applies to missiles. This applies to everything, and at many different scales. So you can design these systems to protect cities, in theory. And again, if the Iranians had this, they probably would wait to use it. They would test it. They've been doing a lot of testing. They've been experimenting with older missiles like the Diego Garcia firing. I don't think that was a mistake, and I don't think they ever intended. In fact, there was probably never explosive in the warheads. They wanted to figure out how close they would get to hitting it, so the next time they try, they will hit. Yeah. The stories about these F-35s, I've said this a few times, just falling out of the sky. It looks like somebody turned them off like a switch. And maybe it was because of a Kuwaiti pilot that went crazy or something like that. But we don't know what the Iranians have. And back in the 90s, technology existed to take out drones. Microwave technology existed to fry their electronics. A lot of this doesn't add up to me. But we don't know what the Iranians have. That could be a big fucking surprise. And as always, we don't really know what the Chinese and Russians are going to do. But again, this is kind of like the battle map, right? If you can actually see the screen here, I'll share this. Here we go. I should have done this before. I think this is where I screwed up. But if you can see the screen, let me know when you can see it. Okay, I don't think I shared this correctly. So imagine, I want you to put on your imagination helmet. Imagine we can protect troops for 6 months, which means we can do a buildup, and somehow we protect them from the Iranians firing missiles. Don't know how, let's play pretend. By the way, in this scenario, the Iranians might actually slow their tempo down to let us build up, let us think they're running out of missiles. They might not even target us directly. The reason is, I think they would want to let us build up and then launch the onslaught, but that's a separate topic. So imagine we got 6 months to build up. If you're looking at this map right now, here's the deal. You've got an avenue of approach if you want to come from Azerbaijan territory in Armenia, and that's north of Iran. Turkmenistan is kind of neutral, but in theory, Trump could probably promise them something. You could come in from the north through Turkmenistan. The blue hash stuff, as I said before, the hashed up blue stuff, and if you're listening right now, guess what? All you have to do is go to my website and grab that PDF picture. Just click on it. But the blue hash stuff, that would be like SLOGO, meaning you're not going to move quickly, Rommel style. And the black stuff is no-go, which means you shouldn't even try. Which means if you're going to try to move an armored division around Iran, understand that most of Iran is mountainous. So you're going to find yourself in a few open areas, but you're going to be surrounded all the time by mountains. This is not a good situation for armor, especially in asymmetric warfare. This is really bad. But these people think, you know, Patton is still a thing. best case scenario, you're going to build up near 500,000 troops in 6 to 9 months. You're going to do it hoping they're not being attacked by missiles every day. Now you got these forces built up. Once you start the attack, if the Iranians are doing what I think they're doing, that's when they would launch their massive missile onslaught. And I don't think they would be gentle or kind. So if you expect 10,000 missiles to hit a single division, like let's say one armored division, like let's say the 10th Mountain and some cav team comes in through Armenia and Azerbaijan. I don't think it's going to happen like that, but let's play pretend. They'll wait for people to move off the start line, and that's when they'll rain hell. So in theory, they might just invite us in. In theory, they might just say, go ahead. You know, not so much invite them in, but they might kind of make it seem like they're playing dead. That could be pretty bad. I don't know. There is no way you rommel your way to Tehran without going through some really bad terrain. And if you're looking at this picture and you imagine that Iran is an island, it doesn't look exactly like Iwo Jima, but you could say, well, imagine you magnified Iwo Jima, you know, several thousand times, millions of times. Iran is that. It's bad territory. It's dug in. Heavy complexes, underground, under rock, under steel, concrete. And folks, I just threw this together today. This is not the actual war plan. Oh my God. I haven't had to worry about intelligence preparation of the battlefield in decades. I'm sure this is shit. But my point is really quite simple. Where on this map are you going to rapidly assault Tehran? You're not going to do it from the Caspian Sea for lots of reasons, not least of which Russia. You're not really going to do it from Iraq because you immediately hit mountain ranges and that's going to suck. You could take Karg Island, and that seems like a worst case scenario because you're going to find yourself in a prison camp being shelled every day by missiles and rockets and other things. You could send a lot of troops into Iran, and then you could watch them suffer massive casualties. And then the question comes, what do we do next? This is the problem with the Iran situation. There's almost no path that doesn't lead eventually to somebody using a nuclear weapon. So when people tell me things like, well, Dan, we can just, you know, we can invade Iran like we did Iraq. People need to look and compare the map of Iraq to the map of Iran and also understand that after we defeated Saddam Hussein, you remember when Bush landed on the aircraft carrier, mission accomplished? But the war wasn't really over yet, was it? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for pointing out an inconvenient truth. Sorry, not sorry, though. No, Karg Island would be worse than Dunkirk. But here's the difference. With Dunkirk, ordinary British people could get in their fishing boat and go pick up British soldiers and French soldiers. Nobody is going to pick nobody up. This could be the worst case scenario for a military force. And I didn't mention this, but historically, if you want to understand Karg Island, research Task Force Smith. It's the summer of 1950. The North Koreans have just invaded the South. They're moving south real fast. They're kicking our ass. We're forming the Pusan Wall, and we decided we hadn't had it all. So we formed a battalion of light troops, and we set them up on that highway, not really a highway, that dirt road path going from the north to the south. Roughly 300 soldiers, plus or minus. Equipped like a light force from World War II, bazookas designed for tanks that they didn't really destroy during World War II. What they have heading at them is 1 to 2 heavy North Korean divisions with T-34s. And I know people want to beat up on the Russians, but the reality is, in economic terms and technical terms, if you look at the whole picture, the T-34 was the best tank of World War II. So we've got these T-34s rolling at us, and we got about 300 troops against 10 to 20,000 North Koreans with tanks. Would you like to venture to guess how that turned out? Do you ever wonder what it would be like to beat a speed bump? That was Task Force Smith. Free Patton's son-in-law, yeah. There is no way. You don't need to look at General Dan and General Gingerbread. You don't need to look at my half-ass IPB. You can do your own thinking by just opening up Google Maps and looking at the nation of Iran. You can look at Pakistan. You can look at Afghanistan. You can look at all the stands. You can look at Azerbaijan. You can look at Iraq. And you can say to yourself, well, Dan, we toppled Iraq. The United States and the Russians and the Israelis and the Europeans gave Saddam Hussein almost, no, that's not true, pretty much everything he wanted to defeat the Iranians during the war he started, the Iran-Iraq War. Did he succeed? He had chemical weapons, he had missiles, he had it all. He had all of our really cool, well, not all of it, but he had a fair amount of our technology. Did he succeed? The Russians gave him tech. Did he succeed? The simple fact is Saddam Hussein failed because the Iranians are not pushovers. They are way closer to being like Japan in 1905 than Venezuela in 2026. And we don't really know what's going to happen in Venezuela yet, do we? Because what it looks like we did, or really did, was just a raid. And we're hoping that whoever takes over will kind of be okay, but we really don't know what's going to happen next in Venezuela. No more fatwas, no more declarations. Let's move up the energy ladder. Let's come together and heal instead of breaking the sticks. Can we? Can we take the fist and unclench it and hold all our hands and say, I love you. I love you. I hug you. Can I say I hug you? It's like I stretch my arms out to you and I say, hug you. Hug me. Love you. Can we just do that instead of dropping bombs on each other? And they say, well, that's gross, Dan. I'd rather drop a bomb on you. I think we're going to stay on the air for a few more minutes. I wanted to play catch up. I am not ashamed. I was honest yesterday with you guys about what happened. And I'm glad I removed those links and those podcasts. I'm glad some of you heard it. Because I need people to hear things like this, because I feel like I'm in a world where I am not heard. And the simple truth is, I have a job in the school district where people that do my job kind of get treated like shit. I'm a member of the same toilet bowl. And they had a strike a couple years ago, and from what I can tell, it didn't really succeed. So I don't know what this, I can't really say what's going to happen with me in that situation. I think it's more likely than not I'll finish out the school year. And there's a chance I'll come back next year. But brothers and sisters, talking about things that are 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months in the future, it feels like I'm talking about magical shit at this point. I have no idea what I'll be doing this time next year. I could be doing this. I could be podcasting. I could be working at the school. That all could be true. But if you were going to ask me, do I truly think it's going to be kind of normal like this time next year? I don't. Hey, Bryce, life is life. I'm glad to see you. Just so you know, I'm probably going to be shutting things down in a few minutes, but this will be recorded and out there. Yeah, and so you'll be able to listen to the whole thing, you know. Listen to the whole thing. Enjoy it. On your own time. I just have to process the files and put them up there. But I'm probably going to get off the air. Now, tomorrow's Thursday, so you know, every Thursday I'm trying to stay committed to this. I'll be on at 3:45 p.m. No more fatwas. No more fatwas. No more declarations of destruction. We're going to work on hugs and love and trying to find balance and maybe even clean our colon. We might even discover that we were always filled with tiny little angels made of tiny little fairies made of smaller angels. It's okay, Bryce. So for Wednesday, March the 25th, roughly 3:07 p.m., have a great rest of your evening. Thank you for showing up. This will be uploaded so you can hear the whole thing. It's all going to be available. And tomorrow at 3:45 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right? Am I right? The standard is the Pacific. Tomorrow will be our weekly whatever. No different from this whatever, right? It'll just be more fun. And until then, you get out there and you fight these fatwas.